Now on to our bloggers roundtable. This week, the folks who made the internet pop are talking about the political power of Hollywood's black elite. Also, what caused the death of Army Private First Class Lavina Johnson? She was killed in Iraq 2 years ago. Plus, what kind of black are you? Joining me now, self-described vigilante pundit Baratunde Thurston. He's a blogger for several sites, including the Huffington Post, also writes for Jack and Jill Politics under the pseudonym Jack Turner. We also have cultural commentator Liza Saboteur. She publishes the community blog Culture Kitchen, and public educator Avery Tooley. His blog is Stereo Describes My Scenario. Welcome, folks.
Hello.
Hey, Farai.
So we have checked out an article in the LA Times about the political power of black celebrities. Oprah Winfrey backing Barack Obama, Magic Johnson, Hillary Clinton. Those celebrities are planning fundraisers for their respective candidates in September. So what's interesting here is Obama has support from a younger and some would say more hip group like Will Smith, Jamie Foxx, and Chris Rock. And Clinton's famous black supporters include Quincy Jones and the Motown founder Berry Gordy. So Avery, what kind of influence do celebrities have on voters? Does it extend beyond the money that they raise, which, you know, money's the mother's milk of politics?
I think that the celebrity influence kind of depends on the demographics of who they reach. Magic kind of has a cross-generational appeal to some extent, whereas some of the other celebrities may be for a younger or an older group.
I feel, though, that what we're looking at is more that they're representative of the actual demographics that are behind the candidates. And I do feel that Hillary Clinton's supporters tend to be more establishment, whereas Barack's are really younger and definitely more on the left side of things.
And piggybacking on top of that, I mean, this generational split that you see sort of pop culturally, you also see in the black political establishment where you have sort of the old guard view, which
right.
values a certain level of experience, a certain tenure, a certain dues payingness, if you will, versus the younger set, which always just wants to rough it up a little bit and kind of bust down the door and change right. the rules.
And I think if you look at it, maybe a sports analogy, maybe Hillary's like Bledsoe and Obama might be like Tom Brady.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, God.
Is that a football reference?
Why, yes, it is.
We love that.
Avery, you had to go there.
Yes, I did.
Well, here, black people had to talk about sports. Come on.
Here's something that, you know, I kind of want to throw out to the group. And, Liza, maybe you can talk about this. Of course, there were folks like Puff Daddy or P. Diddy or whatever Sean Combs is using, who came out in 2004 and really tried to get young people to vote based on the hip-hop celebrity. Do you think that celebrity alone is a motivator enough to get people to come out?
No, actually, Vote or Die proved that it wasn't successful at all in that particular sense. I mean, there are good intentions behind a lot of these campaigns, but, you know, we also have to reckon with the fact that they're great publicity vehicles. And Vote or Die is one of those particular projects that really didn't go beyond the scope of, you know, the specific moment in time in 2004. But then again, you have, you know, a project like Voto Latino, who's been, you know, which has been registering young Latino voters all across the country in a lot of different venues, partnered up with MTV and other organizations, public and nonprofit. And they've been extremely successful in getting a lot of kids, you know, to register to vote. So, you know, but that depends, you know, again, they do have celebrities backing them up, but it's not the celebrity that's actually the vehicle.
And I think if you talk about, you know, Oprah, there's this assumption that we're talking about the black vote here. But if you look at the
right.
people, Oprah doesn't control the black
right.
vote. Like, she controls the Midwestern mom vote,
right.
Right. which is crucial,
right.
you know what I'm saying, down in Ohio, et cetera. But Oprah is going to do very well in that sector of the country.
That's a great point, Baratunde, because I feel that the old school racial politics are not being played out at all in this coming election. I feel that, you know, party allegiances and issues allegiances are all over the place. And what I do feel is that, again, it is more based on whether you're establishment or not, whether how long have you been around, that's how, you know, people are starting to go to the candidates.
Before we move on, Avery, what do you think about the whole idea that giving money is in and of itself a form of political activism that's equal to or maybe even greater than voting? Some people who are political strategists say, oh, more African Americans need to donate. That's how you're going to gain traction. And does this whole celebrity fundraising play into that?
I think there's an extent to which that's accurate, because in the as the system is currently devised, the party with the most money tends to win. But I think that politics, as played like that, does little for the man in the street. And I think that it has to be a groundswell of, right, of activity. Otherwise, it's just, you know, playing names at the top.
Now, here's something I know all of you are going to sink your teeth into. What kind of black are you? That's an article that was the title of an article in the Washington Post. What kind of black are we? And so some people want to be called black. Some people want to be called African-American. Some people just want to be called African. And I'm not talking about people from Africa, but people of African descent. Baratunde, is a name really the same for the same people?
I don't think it is, but you know, in my own case, it doesn't matter so much to me what the name is. I'll go by black, I'll go by African American. I think what's more important is the level of misunderstanding or and respect or lack thereof amongst the different groups that we have in the diaspora, even in this country. I mean, I have a Nigerian name, but I'm not Nigerian, and I cannot describe to you the level of flack I have caught from my fellow Nigerian brothers and sisters who are like, where did you get that name? And what, like, they're blaming me for,
like, you picked
that
it up off the street,
like,
without asking.
I stole it from the registry of names. You know, it's like, let's chill out. But I think there's a deep history of this sort of misinformation and distrust on both sides. I mean, Black America came up referring to African booty scratchers, sending missionaries over to tame the heathens. And you have, you know, Africans, you know, from Africa coming here who have adopted these sort of the lazy, shiftless Negro tone that, oh, don't associate with the Black Americans because they're all drug dealers and gangsters, et cetera. So there's so much work to do to sort of heal our community around the world and in this country that the name is the least of my concerns.
Right. Liza, absolutely, you come from an intercultural background. Tell us a little bit about that and how people perceive you and how you perceive the debate.
Right. I mean, I, you know, both my parents are Puerto Rican, but my mother's white and my father was black. And, you know, my father came from slaves. Slavery was abolished in Puerto Rico. It was the last place in the Americas to have slavery abolished. So, you know, there's pictures of some of my ancestors still with the branding on their, you know, on their bodies. And I remember, you know, my calling my, even though I'm a light-skinned black woman, my calling myself negra was a big issue when I was growing up, and I discovered it to be a very powerful political statement for me from very early on. And I remember that, you know, my mother's mother would be like, I'm mija, but, you know, you're not really black.
Well, in many cultures, there's all these languages for, you know, this shade and that shade and this hair color. Do you what would people call you if not negra?
Trigueña. You know, which is, you know, literally, I mean, the etymology of the word means wheatish.
Wow.
But it's meant to mean brown. And so, and, you know, in the Caribbean, I would be like, I don't know. I'm not that high yellow, but, you know, some people would consider me that. But, you know, and I'm not dark enough to be mulata, although my sister is. So, but, you know, in Puerto Rico, we have a lot of racial issues. And that, you know, they are mirrored, obviously, here in the United States. What I find really interesting is that my being a Puerto Rican black woman is almost looked at by some, you know, African-American people as being less than black. And I find that really outrageous, given the histories of our struggles here in this country, that, you know, somehow because my parents were not born here, I am less than black. And so I completely understand the whole CRAP that Obama has to deal with on a daily basis because, you know, I mean, who owns blackness, for God's sake?
Actually, I do. I registered the trademark a little while back. You know, $50,000.
But so, it's true. So
Avery, you know, jumping in on this, do we need to get our act together? We meaning people of African descent, and really heal these rifts between ourselves before we can talk on any broader level?
Well, I think it's that's a reasonable question, but I think there's a question of whether blackness is applicable anywhere except here, because in the same way that Asian means something here, but it doesn't mean something in any other countries. So, you know, you may have groups that in their native countries dislike each other, but here they're all under the rainbow Asian. I think that's the same. That's the same. A similar parallel. So we have groups that, you know, for whatever reason, we all have some degree of melanin.
Right.
And that's about all we have in common, necessarily.
And the cultural.
And so, right.
Some folks would disagree with certain cultural
artifacts. But some people claim them. Some people don't. So, you know, I think there's a. Do we necessarily all have to fit under the same umbrella? Do we all play the same team? Do we all even really wear the same jersey?
Well, let's move on to another topic that's been getting a lot of traction in the blogosphere and, frankly, in other forms of media. There is the story of Army Private First Class Lavina Johnson. She died in Iraq in July of 2005, 8 days shy of her 20th birthday. Now her father, Jack Johnson, says that an Army representative told him that his daughter died of self-inflicted non-combat injuries. So we called the U.S. Army's press information office. They would not clarify their classification of Johnson's death by airtime. Lavina's father, John Johnson, says evidence on her body suggests a possible sexual assault, says her body was burned. He's calling for help in getting her case reopened. And over the weekend, he spoke at the Veterans for Peace Speak Out on sexual assault in the military in downtown St. Louis.
We, after 10 months, got paperwork. When we went through the paperwork, we could see that Lavina was severely beaten. She was set on fire. They tried to burn the tent down that she was in with her body in it. She was shot, it looked like, but definitely not suicide. When we put a package together and we sent it back to the Army and we said, you need to relook at this because there's a problem, they told me her case was closed. And that's where they stand today.
Again, that was Lavina Johnson's father, Jack Johnson. Liza, are bloggers the natural audience for spreading this kind of a story?
Oh, God, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I actually haven't been following it as close as other of my colleagues, but this, particularly in the feminist blogosphere, has been getting a lot of traction. I mean, we're looking here at a potential case far worse than Pat Tillman's, and especially because of the sexual assault, the cover-up, and the outright lies around this case. And there's the stonewalling that is happening, and there, you know, with a father that wants answers about his daughter's death.
Well, let me get Avery in here. How can bloggers cover a story like this when so little information is known? Is there actually a chance of spreading misinformation?
There is a chance of spreading misinformation, but given that misinformation has been provided from the get-go, I think that bloggers have a chance to really uncover some truth that's not being dealt with.
And Baratunde, does this story have legs?
It absolutely has legs, and I think, you know, connecting it to the Tillman story may be one of the best ways to help shine additional light on it. But, you know, as Avery just said, misinformation has been spread from official sources from the start. I mean, if you look at the entire story, you realize that Lavina's recruitment itself was based on lies. She was told that she had no chance of even being deployed to Iraq because she was a woman.
Right.
Then they clarified that statement in front of her parents and said, well, the likelihood is very low. And Liza, speaking to the feminist point, this really is a story about violence against women in the military, which is something that's gone on forever. We've got, you know, at a minimum of 30% of women returning saying they've been sexually assaulted by a colleague or by a superior,
right,
with no mechanism to get that word out. I mean, you know, the image that this father described of his daughter is the very thing we're supposed to be fighting against. You know,
exactly.
We're inflicting terrorism on the people we have tossed out there to quote-unquote defeat terrorism. It's the worst type of hypocrisy.
All right, we're going to have to end it there. We could go on and on. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we've been speaking with Baratunde Thurston. He blogs for sites including The Huffington Post and Jack and Jill Politics. Cultural commentator Liza Saboteur. She publishes the community blog Culture Kitchen. Both were at our New York studios. Also, public educator Avery Tooley. His blog is Stereo Describes My Scenario, and he was at our Washington, D.C. headquarters. You don't want to make them cry. Next on News and Notes, the newest member of the Congressional Black Caucus and our staff song pick of the week.